A warning, our next story is disturbing, may even be traumatizing for some listeners. It is for the author who tells it. Authors live with their characters for months, for years. So how could Affinity Konar live with Joseph Mengele, called the Angel of Death at Auschwitz for the way he calmly performed unspeakable experimental surgeries on twins and little people and albinos during the Holocaust? Well, maybe it's bearable because also in Affinity's head, Mengele's victims, a circus family, an albino named Bruno, and the twins Stasha and Pearl. Through them, she makes us look at the horror they experienced, but also fall in love with their resilience and magical thinking. As author Anthony Doerr says, it's a book about the most odious of crimes that also manages to have the lightness of a fairy tale. Affinity Konar's debut novel is Mischling, the Nazi word for mixed breed, and she drew on stories of real-life survivors to tell hers. She joins us from the NPR studios in Culver City. Welcome and congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and you just said something before we started that it's difficult for you to talk about this. I was glad to hear that, you know, because this is such a difficult topic. Why were you drawn to it?
I think I was always sort of drawn to the unspeakable in a certain way and to the effort to try to articulate it. But you don't imagine that there will come a day when you will actually have to talk about it.
Well, and how did that happen? You credit all the other books have been, and many have been written, nonfiction in particular.
Yes, there was one book in particular that just gripped me at a very young age. I found it when I was 16. It was called Children of the Flames by Lucette Lugnato. And this book tells the story of the twins of Auschwitz, but also the story of Mengele. And I feel like my interest was first sparked by the injustice of Mengele, the fact that he was never captured. He would never accounted for any of these horrors, these crimes. And then over time, I found myself shifting my focus, as it should have been, over to the twins.
Are you having difficulty now?
Oh, I feel like I will never be okay talking about this, to be honest. It still feels very fresh, especially now that I'm hearing from people about it. Yeah. I've been privileged to read poetry by people who experienced this directly. A woman who, her mother was a twin who was unable to remain with her own twin, a woman who was able to come to America while her twin perished. Yeah. So, yeah, I had a strange feeling when the book was done, a strange sort of loss. And now it's a very different kind of trajectory. It is reliving it in a different way.
This is traumatic. Let's try in a way that we can to explain, because you say perished, and that becomes an almost antiseptic word. These twins, they are separated because Mengele wanted to see, will one survive and the other not? And the operations are unspeakable. They have organs removed. They have needles in their eyes. It's grotesque.
Absolutely. You know, you start to wonder how much you can bear doing this kind of research. The photographs are obviously things that you don't ever really recover from.
Yeah. Well, but then you will also read about twins like Eva Moses Kaur and Miriam Moses Zeiger, twin sisters who were incarcerated in Auschwitz, experimented on by Mengele. And it was Moses Kaur who co-wrote the book Echoes from Auschwitz, Dr. Mengele's Twins. You found something in this research that also made you think, oh, there's something here that's also a life force.
Oh, absolutely. You read these narratives and you also find a sort of innocence that's so strange, and you wonder how they were possibly able to cling to it and to each other. I mean, Eva, in her memoirs, will speak about the darkest moments. She'll speak about even, you know, after liberation, during the death marches, being separated from her sister Miriam. And they miraculously find each other again within a sea of people at these one barracks. And they start referring to these barracks as their lucky barracks. Mm. And the language of that just always struck me. You know, the love that they had for each other just carried over everything.
Well, and again, to make clear what we're talking about here, Eva Moses Kaur later remembers a set of gypsy twins who Mengele sewed together at the back because he wanted to see if he could make a Siamese twin. And she listened to them scream for days. Gangrene set in and they died. You work that into your account as well.
Yes, because it emphasizes how not only ruthless these experiments were, but also how pointless. It's hard to imagine any sort of scientific mind really thinking that that was going to yield a result worthy of attention.
Yeah. It's so disturbing to read, you know, these children with their organs sewn together. But the thing that compels us on is, again, the sense of whimsy. These children who are trying to figure out their reality, both when they're out in Auschwitz, but then also after they're, quote, freed, they still have to make their way as children with animal cloths wrapped around them and no shoes through snow to try to find family or a place to live. And you have one of your twins escaping. Can you read a section that has a little bit of that? Are we in a nightmare? Are we in a dream? Where are we? As they come upon what they think is a temple.
Okay. So, like a brass bell sprinkled with snow, this straw temple rose from the earth with a steady determination. As we neared, we saw that we were not the only ones that this golden column had drawn in. It appeared that bales had been removed from the lowermost of the stack to create a burrow. We could see the discarded piles of hay flung about, their golden threads strewn on the ice, and through a flimsy panel of straw at the rear, we could see a peepery of eyes. They were scattered throughout in the manner of a constellation and with equal glitter. The eyes were friendly, I thought, but I'd been wrong about the friendliness of eyes before.
And of course, the eyes turn out to be other escapees from Auschwitz trying to get some warmth from the cold in a giant pile of hay bales. Again, how much did this parallel the real-life stories that you'd heard of?
It was a really interesting process of being sort of inspired by the personalities. I didn't feel comfortable taking the direct arc of any of their stories and mimicking it on the page. It was very much more a matter of paying tribute to their spirits rather than step-by-step their journeys back home.
Well, and you were also inspired by another story, Gisela Pearl, a real-life Romanian gynecologist sent to Auschwitz, who gave you inspiration for another major character of yours, Dr. Miri. Dr. Miri oversaw the children in Mengele's labs and also a Jew. We're not sure what to think of her until we find out that, well, as the real-life Dr. Pearl did, your Dr. Miri saved women. How did she do that?
She has the terrible task of preserving lives while ending others. She had to perform abortions on women in order to save them within the camp, because to be a pregnant woman within the camp was a terrible thing. You were absolutely doomed.
Because Mengele would want to perform experiments on you.
Yes, he would vivisect women. And these were not just simply cases where Mengele would abort the children. These children would be made to suffer as they died in just extraordinary ways. And Gisela Pearl would save the lives of the mothers, but it absolutely haunted her that she had to abort the children in order to do this. Yeah. And, you know, she would later have a sort of peal in her head of, please God, let me deliver a healthy baby. Later in her practice, it was something that always followed her.
Yeah. Well, in fact, the real-life Gisela Pearl tried to kill herself, was interrogated in 1947 when she went to New York on suspicion of assisting Nazi doctors in Auschwitz. She does have to, in some cases, help Mengele perform some of these terrible experiments, but she's sort of doing that while, on the other hand, saving women by performing these abortions in secret. But she finally does become, as your Dr. Miri does, a gynecologist in New York's Mount Sinai Hospital?
Yes. That was a very important storyline for me. I didn't even know it when I started the book. Well, I didn't know many things about how the book would turn out, but I didn't really know that her character would become so vital to the story.
But what do you do now? It sounds like these characters, they're not leaving you.
No, it's very hard because it feels like my life's work, and yet I can't live without writing. I miss the characters deeply, and I find myself just sort of wondering from day to day, what would this person's future be like? Just even from the most minor character within the book. It's something that is still compelling me in some ways. I don't know when it's ever going to leave me.
And yet, is there some, you know, solace in the fact that you are telling their stories?
I think that there is a great solace in the fact that telling these stories are enabling me to hear other stories from different people, stories that I never would have expected to hear, especially as someone who shuts themselves up in a room and writes all day.
Meaning the people who are contacting you now.
Yes, it's incredible.
Yeah. That's Affinity Konar, her debut novel, Mischling, her combination of the horror of the Holocaust and a sort of a fairy tale way that the young victims tried to make sense of it. Affinity, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll have an excerpt at hereandnow.org.